thank you for being here today. We have a session here put together for you to talk about vascular complications in surgery, general surgery. I'm joined here with my co-moderator, Dr. Mawad. And we have selected the speakers today for you who are going to talk about their experiences with this. The theme is going to be that these things happen. We're not trying to point fingers at anybody, but we're really trying to raise awareness about these kinds of complications and try and bring some thought to it. And hopefully, if you do encounter one of these down the road, that you'll remember this session and see if you can navigate your way out of that. So without any further delay, I'd like to just say a few words about our first speaker. This is Dr. George Anton. He's from Cleveland, Ohio, where he's at the Cleveland Clinic Foundation. He has a unique perspective. He was in private practice for 20 years by himself, and he also became a pilot at the age of 14. So he's going to talk to us today about situational awareness in the operating room. A little bit of prevention is worth a ton of cure. Dr. Anton?
Good afternoon. Thank you for coming, and thank you for having me here. So the task of situational awareness, ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Let's see how that relates to an operating room setting. So I have no relevant financial relationships other than I'll have Dr. Galani buy me a nice glass of cognac later. So here's my message. Not how to think, not what to think, how to think. So if you go back to 1994, Norm Herzer's presidential address, outcome assessment in vascular surgery, results mean everything. And outcome assessment was hinged on three parameters, morbidity, mortality, and length of stay. At that point in time, we weren't focused in on wrong site, wrong procedure, wrong patient surgery. But that does have something to do with the outcome, doesn't it? So the message is clear. I always wanted to be a surgeon. Surgeons were able to help people in a uniquely direct way, and the surgeons I admire most were willing to sacrifice something of themselves to do it. Good surgeons could look anyone squarely in the eye because they had invested their lives in a career that made a difference. They acted decisively. When the best interests of their patients hung in the balance, they elevated their profession. I wanted to become one of them, and so did you. Now, the recurrent message here is they acted decisively. Okay? And the interesting thing is, it doesn't have to happen just for surgeons. It can be nurses that help you in the operating room. It could be medical students. Anybody can act decisively. And that's the ongoing message throughout this talk. So what is situational awareness? Very simply, everybody is probably familiar with the definition. Situational awareness, fully and comprehensively understanding one's surroundings, environment, and situation. Now, if you were to Google Jason Bourne, you know, the Jason Bourne movies, Bourne Identity, Bourne Ultimatum, and all that, you Google Jason Bourne and situational awareness, this is the scene you're going to get, because let's face it, what kept him alive was situational awareness. He's always scanning if you watch the movie. So here's the first scene.
And the first thing I'm doing is I'm catching the sidelines and looking for an exit.
Can you hear it? I don't hear it.
I can tell you the license plate numbers of all six cars outside. I can tell you that our waitress is left-handed and the guy sitting up at the counter weighs 215 pounds and knows how to handle himself. I know the best place to look for a gun is the cab of the gray truck outside. And at this altitude, I can run flat out for a half mile before my hands start shaking.
I don't know what happened to the audio, but this was working as of Sunday. But the point is, why would he know that? Because he was trained to know about situational awareness. So can it be learned? Yes. You need information, you need to educate. Some people do it naturally. They recognize patterns and create their own paradigms and thinking automatically. Little effort. It's a gift. But we don't all have that gift. so we can develop situational awareness. So loss of situational awareness occurs during periods of high workload, periods of multitasking, the brain cannot multitask, preoccupation with other tasks, inadequate feedback from other crew members, i.e. people in the operating room, and periods of stress. You know, you're working on a ruptured aneurysm and they're calling you from the ER with an ischemic leg. That's a bit of a distraction. And interactions with automated systems such as checklists. So situational awareness is compromised under the following conditions. Here's what happens. It's task saturation. Once that goes up, situational awareness goes down. This is for you, Rami. No longer are you thinking ahead of the airplane. So let's talk about some real stories here. Where's the shunt? So for a carotid endarterectomy, the earlobe is to the left. Let's see if we can show this here. Here's the earlobe, here's the carotid, there's some hemorrhage in the plaque, and we use a shunt for cerebral protection. Clean the plaque out, that's what it looks like. There's the plaque there, you see the superior thyroid, ascending pharyngeal, and there's a vein patch, ansus cervicalis, hypoglossal nerve, jugular. And so here's the real story, where's the shunt? So there was a surgeon in the Cleveland area who opened the carotid artery and asked for the shunt. Well, the nurse on the Mayo stands, well, I don't have a shunt. We'll look back on the table, find a shunt. Well, there's no shunt. We'll look in the room and find a shunt. No shunt. We'll go outside and find, there was no shunt. So they jerry-rigged a piece of tubing to insert in there, and that didn't work, and so she had a major stroke, and $5 million later, that was the end of that story. Here's another one, pretty common, did you give the heparin? So during an angiographic procedure, and the most common one is this crossover approach, okay, through the femoral, put a big sheath in, okay, so you access the common femoral artery, and over goes this big sheath, and it's somewhat partially occlusive, and it's thrombogenic, so you have to give heparin during the course of that procedure. And typically, such as this here, the lesion was in the superficial femoral artery, and there was only single vessel runoff. Now, here's the real story. Did you give the heparin? So the surgeon performing a procedure was a very skilled surgeon. The problem is that when he shot the runoff angiogram, there was clot in the single vessel runoff. First question he asked the nurse at the head was, did you give the heparin? She said, no. And he said, well, you heard me give the heparin, but she didn't hear him, okay? So no heparin was given. Well, he rescued the limb probably tens of thousands of dollars and hours later. So what happened? What was missing in each one of these scenarios? So in the first carotid one, there was a lack of communication. You know, we're gonna use a shunt. So you tell those people. The second one, we need to give heparin once the sheath is in. Well, you know, you need to share the flight plan with these people. You should use a checklist before you ever open a blood vessel or start putting a sheath in somebody. And there was complete lack of closed-loop communication between the sender, receiver, and back to the sender. Please give the heparin. Heparin is given. Copy that, okay? And then there was a total loss of situational awareness with everyone in both rooms. And it winds up being something like this. So let's talk about the OODA loop. Anybody here know what the OODA loop is? This is for you, Rami. I didn't come here to tell them something they already knew. So OODA loop was designed by Colonel John Boyd. He was a teenager during World War II, but he became a fighter pilot in the Korean War and the Vietnam War. And what happened was, as jets became faster and faster, if you're gonna win the dogfight against the MiGs, you have to have a situation where you can make these decisions quickly. And nobody could beat him in a dogfight. So here's the OODA loop. Observe, orient, decide, act. So you gather data, you assess that data and orient, you decide. You make good decisions and then you act. Remember Norm Herzer, act when decisively, when the balance of your patient hangs in the balance. So that's the OODA loop. And there are multiple OODA loops in any complex procedure, such as a trauma patient or an ER patient, okay? So let's have a case study here. 37-year-old gets a lumbar laminectomy, 1992. I get called down, and the patient was off the table. I had to move her back on, and the anesthesiologist was trying to start a central jugular line for resuscitation. And I said, you know, I don't have time for that. I just need to have you put the patient to sleep so I can clamp some big vessel. So the UDA loop, right? Observe, orient, decide, act. Now, the problem was he was overwhelmed. So the first thing I did was I ran out of the room. Now, why would you run out of the room? He needed help. I went right around to the anesthesia. I said, two more anesthesiologists in that room. This woman's dying. So as a result, I was able to do the case. Now, if you look at this, here was the injury. This is the aorta. This is the left common iliac artery. Here's the right common iliac artery. So the right common iliac artery was transected clean right in half. I get in there and I see these two rigatoni's sticking up. I'm feeling pretty good about myself. I look down and there's blood welling up in the pelvis. Well, new OODA loop, right? So what happened was the left iliac vein, which goes under the bifurcation, was shredded. About a 4-centimeter length was shredded. So I fix the cava, but then I still have this left iliac vein. If I ligate it, she's going to have a big swollen leg. Here's another OODA loop. Anyhow, I wound up mobilizing the whole area, and you have the, I lost the mouse. Anyhow, you have the new bifurcation of the iliac vein right here, and you fix the vein first before you fix the arterial injury. Another case, 41-year-old nurse, she had a lumbar laminectomy on a Thursday. Friday afternoon, she was to be discharged, but passed out in the bathroom there, and they brought her down to the ICU. And two things happened. I used to tell Dr. Galani, in an emergency, 90% of the people kind of are paralyzed in shock, and the other 10% are doing the wrong thing. So I get there, and there's a whole bunch of people around her, but we're not moving her anywhere. So you have to sort of brush them away like flies on a rib roast and then get her into the operating room, because this is what you're dealing with. So that's a little diagram I drew, and I took that section out. That's the proximal end of the left common iliac artery, and you can see how chewed up it was. That's the middle sacral artery you see right down there. Anyhow, that you couldn't reconstruct that, so you put a bifurcation graft in. You can see all the retroperitoneal hemorrhage on this patient. So the last one, now keep in mind, neither one of these people resuscitated. They had just a no IVs in one of them. Now here's a case that was the simplest one for me. I this is a nice clean laceration of the left common iliac vein. This is easy. But if you notice, this is a little strange color. This is a postmortem picture. You see the cava is opened up here. This is the left common iliac. So this was a left common iliac transection and a left common iliac vein laceration, but she died. And the reason was, when I went into the room, she was attended by some really good people who had central lines, and they resuscitated her. And you know the model of resuscitation is not to resuscitate. You don't treat the blood pressure. Ken Maddox can tell you all about that, and so did Stanley Crawford with ruptured aneurysms. So you don't resuscitate. So scenario-based training in aviation develops critical thinking and problem solving. Scenario-based learning is what we use in medicine, right? Most effective when used cases based on actual rather than hypothetical scenarios, just as the actual cases I presented here. So training scenarios require complex situations. They're not linear. The parameters often change, such as intraoperative situations. So complex situations require critical thinking and problem-solving skills, and that's what you need to develop with your staff to criticize, assess, analyze, synthesize, evaluate, and act on the situation. Okay? Norm Hertzer. So you can only improve if you admit you have room for improvement. You know, if you're egotistical and there's all this hubris, you're not going to improve. So here's the old Gary Larson one, right? The day before Custer's last stand, they're number one. Well, if you think you're number one, you're not going to learn anything, and nor is your staff. So you create redundancy in the OR. Well, that sounds redundant. What does that mean? So in engineering, redundancy is a duplication of critical components or functions of a system with the intention of increasing reliability of the system. That all makes sense. So redundancy provides backup or fail-safe opportunities in actual system performance. Redundant aircraft systems enhance safety in flying. For example, you have hydraulic systems that control the surfaces, where you have three hydraulic systems. If one goes down, you have two others. If the second one goes down, you have a third. If all three goes down, well, it's Sierra, Oscar, Lima. So introduce redundancy in the surgical procedures. Share the flight plan with everybody. It is an OR team. This is my favorite book by James Reason, Managing the Risks of Accidents, okay? So there are active failures. This is the person at the sharp end who always gets blamed for the problem. Unsafe acts, shortcuts, distractions, failures to utilize checklists and protocols, complacency and inattention. But there's always something that led up to that. It's not just one person, one time, one act, okay? So there are latent conditions that actually are leading up to that final problem. Gaps in supervision, shortfalls in training, inadequate equipment, poor communication, biggest problem of all, poor planning and no communication. Ambiguous procedures, you don't tell the staff what type of procedure, what positioning, what you need. And these are present for years before they all produce gaps. By active failures, they line up with those created by latent conditions, right? And there's that window of opportunity that exists for an accident. This is the Swiss cheese model that you hear about. And if you look, there's the unsafe act on the left, but look at all the preconditions that are there for years before. And what happens is these things all line up. Here's the animation of it. So the unsafe act is all the way to the right, and then these precursors are just looming out there. And it's just an opportunistic event when all these little Swiss cheese holes line up. So latent conditions are always present in complex systems. Our challenge is to identify them. This requires situational awareness. You have to be aware, you have to make new guidelines, maybe new checklists, okay? So Carl Weick points out safety is a dynamic non-event. Produces constant outcome is continuous change, not constant repetition, vigilance, and chronic unease, okay? Organizations having fewer than their fair share of accidents indicate that people who operate and manage them tend to assume that each day will be a bad day and act accordingly. That's me. So beware. Toxic hospital cultures. So hierarchical culture is likely to have greater problems because everybody's afraid to ask questions. Residents may feel afraid to appear uninformed. And the problem is that there was a hierarchical in cockpits, in airline cockpits, which resulted in airline crashes. So they developed crew resource management, which is a combination of interpersonal communication, leadership, and decision making, okay? So be safe, keep your head in the game. Have a relatively safe day. Thank you. On time, huh?